I would like to speak with you this morning about the Dharma. I'm asked so often, what is the Dharma? And over the years, my stock response has been, well, the Dharma is the study of how things happen, how things unfold, how everything occurs. And that's purposefully very non-specific, yeah? I'd like to speak with you a little more specifically. What is Dharma and what is Dharma practice? What are the teachings of the Dharma, really? How much do you understand? The teachings are very precise and very practical suggestions on living a life of ease without regret, living a life without guilt and regret. Suggestions. How to do it or not do it, how to be it, the Dharma. It might be more understandable to think of the Dharma as a structure, really, as a shape in the material world. You think of it as an edifice. It has three pillars, this Dharma teaching. It has three pillars, foundations, support columns. The first pillar is called virtue. It's a strange word. I'm not sure it's really descriptive, but virtue is what it's called. Virtue meaning a moral way of living, a way of pursuing goodness. Virtue. How to live with minimized regret or worry. Clear-minded, light-hearted. In the Four Noble Truths, the Four Noble Truths being, number one, there's suffering in life. Number two, the cause of suffering is the mind's tendency to cling, to hold on. The third truth being, it's possible to release that suffering. And the fourth truth is the path, the way of going about it. The path is called the Eightfold Path. It has eight incremental parts. The first being right understanding. Right understanding, well, it means understanding that this is a life here of impermanence. Everything ends. There is nothing that lasts. Impermanence is part of right understanding, and understanding that that impermanence applies to me and you and everyone you know and love also. Understanding. Right thought is the second aspect. Right thought means having time in the day when there's room to acknowledge in thought, perhaps in some disciplined way, the need for practice, the need for understanding, the need for probing into the teachings in order to more authentically engage, perhaps, in this life that you've been handed. Right thought. How to live in this mystery of not knowing anything, of not knowing who you are. What shall we do? How shall we be here? And then the third aspect of the Eightfold Path is right action. It's called right action, meaning different levels of that meaning. Perhaps the foremost being, don't cause harm. Live in a way that does not create harm for others. Don't certainly take life, no killing. Don't harm. Right action also has levels of suggestion. Not harming meaning don't steal, don't take which is not freely given to you. Don't use sexual energy improperly and unfairly or in an abusively way. Govern and be careful and conscious of your sexuality. Or it might also, right action also meaning don't, if you want to live a life of wisdom, don't indulge excessively in drugs or substances that cloud and intoxicate the mind. Refrain from the unwise use of substances. No stealing. Conscious sexuality. Living cleanly. The virtue part of the pillar of the Dharma includes right action and right speech. The fourth, right speech. Be conscious of how you talk of yourself and others. Not harming applies also to how you speak about others. Don't speak in a way that's hurtful or harmful. Don't indulge in rumor mongering, for instance, or Don't spread rumors. Don't start rumors. Don't speak ill of others if you can avoid it. Tell the truth as much as possible. Virtue. Right action, right speech, right livelihood. Right livelihood is making your living. Everyone has to somehow do work, make a living. Make your livelihood part of the society of humans, contributing to the welfare of others. That would mean don't participate in the manufacture of weapons of destruction, for instance, or the creation of poisons that harm vast numbers of people. Let your work be supportive, not only of yourself, but of your community, of your friends, your family. Right action, right speech, right livelihood. So that's right understanding, right thought, right action, right speech, right livelihood. And the next is right effort. What is right effort, really? What is right effort? What is effort? You hear the phrase so often these days from Nisargadatta, in order to understand effort, you must make great effort to realize that effort will get you nowhere. But it's necessary to make effort. Effort to understand and to practice, to give attention to, right effort. Now we leave the virtue part of the three pillars, and we come into the practice. There's a second pillar, the practice. Right effort, right concentration. Right concentration. Being able to focus the mind's attention in a way that illuminates and reveals the vastness of the mind and the vastness of the silence. Right concentration. And then right mindfulness being number 8, 6, 7, 8, the practice part of the Dharma, the pillar of practice. So we have the pillar of virtue or right living. We have a pillar of right practice. And then the third is the practice of generosity. Conscious practice of generosity. Right action, right thought, right understanding, right speech. It's not so easy to live according to the Eightfold Path. It's not so easy, although these suggestions seem very common sense, obvious. Don't steal. If you don't want to live in a society of theft and dishonesty, don't take what is not given to you. Don't harm others. Work wisely. And then the practice. of concentration, mindfulness, being able to consciously attend with awareness what happens in experience to you from one moment to the next. Being able to receive and understand somewhat what's happening by being awake, mindful, a choiceless awareness. Now it's like this, and now it's like this. Now I feel this, and now I feel that, and I hear, and I see. And I'm touched. Practice. Right virtue, right practice. All of it part of the teachings of the Dharma laid out by the Buddha 2,600 years ago, so carefully, so wisely, as suggestions, not demands, or thou shalt not, or thou shalt, but if you want to live a life of freedom from guilt and regret, and if you want to live a life that fosters as much as possible kindness and caring, concern for yourself and for others, right action, right speech. Right speech is a very difficult one for us, actually. It seems like, what's so hard about that? Well, we love gossip, and we love to spread rumors, and we like to talk bad stuff. We do. It's what makes the news happen. Yeah. Right concentration, focus. Learn to be able to focus attention. Mantra. Concentration on an object that allows the rapidity of the mind's constantly flitting from one subject and one thought to another to slow down a little bit. Slow the speed so that the environment, inner and outer, becomes a little bit more visible, a little bit more detailed in awareness. Right mindfulness. Practice being mindful of your experience simply because it's happening. And to be awake allows for much more possibility of happiness and good functioning in life. Is to be more awake helps. The Dharma, such simple common sense. No, it's not a religion at all. Buddhism is not a religion. It's a philosophy of life that's applicable to every life and every situation and makes sense. It requires some understanding. It's much more profound than you think in the beginning. It is the profundity increases in depth and expanse as time goes on, and the study of the Dharma, how things happen, how you are in this moment, what is happening in your mind, what is going on in the body, how do you fill your days with what activities How do you respond to emotion? How do you respond to forces and energetic pressures that come from ordinary life and community, being among others? The Buddha describes the me mind, the I am mind, the separate sense of something different and separate from everything else, as every effort to secure personal happiness and every effort to maintain relationships with something else other than the ego. Anything, anything. Maintaining relationships with the world, with oneself, friends. The ego life, a life that's predicated upon an idea of separation, self-sustaining existence, and the difference between me, the me living inside this particular form, and everything else outside of it, which is then it becomes other. How do we balance this dynamic of being a me, I am here, and then there is all this other? What is that? How do we live in that separation, that dichotomy? In the Dharma, you begin to learn that there is really no such thing as a separate me. And that's a little difficult to grasp, particularly in the beginning, when each of us is devoted wholeheartedly to being me, interested mainly in this center of the universe self. How to live that way, not harming, not causing strife and sorrow, lamentation. And then the third pillar in the Dharma, the practice of generosity. We don't speak of it so much, the practice of generosity. What is that, really? Well, generosity is a emotion, an energy of giving, giving out, giving away, letting go, and giving to others. Even to oneself. There can be generosity toward oneself. It's an attitude, really. Different kinds of generosity will help understand that a bit. The most common form of generosity is called marketplace generosity. That's what happens with the buying and selling of goods, things. Practice generosity by offering a good deal. But it's always, marketplace generosity is always predicated upon receiving. There's the giving, and the giving happens because there's an expectation of receiving. That's marketplace. generosity. The one most commonly known, the world runs on it, the marketplace, of course. Make America great again, right? He knows. And then there's another kind of generosity called friendly generosity. I remember when I began teaching in Germany, and the habit of the people in the villages and the towns, whenever they were finished with a couch or a chair or some household item and they didn't want it anymore, they put it out on the street. And to be picked up and used by anyone who needs that object. So you'd walk down the street and there would be couches, for instance, lining the street, left for others to use. I was so amazed by that the first time I saw that. That's friendly generosity. Giving of something that you don't want anyway. You know, it's a cluttering up your house. You're finished with it, so you give it away. It's friendly. It's lovely. Give it to someone who can use it. Friendly. Not receiving anything in return. But also not giving of anything that's valued anymore or held closely. Friendly generosity, marketplace generosity. And then there's what's called noble generosity. Noble generosity is the giving, and this usually involves money, because money is the stuff that's most difficult to let go of, or it seems to be, for us humans. Giving of something that's of great value, so that one really wants to hold on to it, and at the same time wants to practice generosity, and so it hurts just a little bit, that kind of giving. It needs to hurt a little bit, so you're aware that you're being generous. Being a teacher, a Dharma teacher who has taught under systems of dana or donation many times, I've been on both ends of the noble generosity situation of being the one who receives noble generosity and also the one who gives. And I discovered it's not so easy to practice noble generosity, particularly if you don't have a lot of money. And, you know, it's appropriate to give it away to someone who has earned it. Noble generosity. Generosity. The spirit of sharing, giving, letting go of separate ownership, coveting, clinging. It's not letting go of value. possessions that have deep meaning. It's letting go of what you can give when the situation is appropriate. The amazing thing about the practice of Dharma, of generosity, and why the third pillar of the Dharma, generosity, is equal in importance to practice itself. It's equally important. And equally important as a life of virtue is the generosity practice. We don't think of it that way, but it is. It produces, when you practice it, a feeling of happiness. There's a feeling of a spacious goodness in the heart that comes with the practice of generosity. It makes you feel good, actually, to let go and give away something of value, no matter to whom it goes. The Buddha is said to have valued the practice of generosity so much that he said, when you practice seriously generosity, what comes to you is a life filled with deep relationships. Deep friendships come from the practice of generosity. Noble generosity. A life of community. Profound relationships that give your life meaning, excitement, love. He said, if you knew the value of generosity, you would never have another meal alone. That's interesting, huh? If you knew the value, you would never not share your meal. Generosity, very important. We don't think of it so much as being as important as meditation or right speech or certainly not killing, but it is just as valuable and important. So, the three pillars, virtue, practice, meditation practice, effort, concentration, mindfulness, all of that in the area of practice. So those are the pillars, virtue, practice, generosity. If you understand those in depth, you will understand the Dharma and how beautiful it is, the Dharma teaching. Doesn't involve any kind of belief system. You don't have to believe in some deity by blind faith. You practice the Eightfold Path. You practice the Dharma and discover for yourself. No one can tell you. You can't find it in books. You can't find it in talks, being told by authorities. Discover it for yourself, the Dharma, by practice, by doing it, by honoring it. Find out the value of generosity. Find out the value of regular practice by making effort. Make Dharma the center of your life. The practice of Dharma being the highest priority in your life. living a life of wisdom and kindness and caring without guilt, without the need to strive and find power over others, which is so common in our world, this power over others motivation. Generosity. Generosity. Giving. Give of yourself. That's generous. The Buddha valued generosity so much that the whole system of teaching in northern India, those thousands of years ago, was predicated upon people leaving their possessions and their accumulated wealth, agreeing to own only two robes, sandals, and a begging bowl to follow the teachings of the Buddha, and practicing generosity by offering the teachings wherever you go. It was a culture of wandering mendicants then. And then receiving the generosity from the community, from people, in the form of food for the bowl and maybe a roof over the head in a storm, or a corner to sleep in. And generosity was so important that the whole system in those days of practicing Dharma was built upon it. Giving generously, receiving. I had the opportunity of observing up close the value of how this works. When my friends arrived in the United States, for having been studying in Thailand and India for years, who began to teach Dharma when they had no place to sleep, literally no money, maybe a little bit on they living on their parents' credit cards, I don't know. But I do know that I owned a house then. I was a doctor and a psychiatrist. I had a home and children, and I was living a householder's life. And I had the great opportunity of supporting these three friends, Joseph Goldstein, Jack Kornfield, Sharon Salzberg, who began teaching Vipassana around the United States in retreats. And they had no place to live, so between retreats, they crashed at my house, which was a whole era of Dharma learning. The Buddhists would arrive between retreats, and then we would be practicing together, celebrating together, learning about each other. My children weren't so happy about the situation. When they would see this happening, they'd say, "Oh, the Buddhists, here come the Buddhists." Because they took up all the space in the house. But it was a wonderful opportunity for me to watch how that system worked. Because before long, somebody donated a car, someone donated some money, and it went on and on and on, and it grew so that someone donated a lot of money and built houses and established meditation centers. The first one was in Massachusetts, Barre, Massachusetts, the Insight Meditation Society was the first one. It was given to them. It was an old Catholic nunnery, monastery. And they turned it into a meditation center, and it began to flourish immediately. Now it's a major teaching center in the world. And then came Spirit Rock and near San Francisco, close by. That came from donations, people generously giving. And lo and behold, this beautiful, beautiful place grew without a mortgage. And now, it's huge, maybe too huge. It's thousands of people practice Dharma there every day. That's how the system worked. I watched my friends trust in generosity, and before long they had their own centers. Donations were given, so a house was built for Jack. A house was built for Joseph and Sharon in Massachusetts, given because of their work. That's how it happened, given freely. I watched it. So I have great, great respect for this practice of generosity and encouraged each of us to consciously practice every day. How have you been generous today? Or how have you withheld today? How is it in your heart, in your mind? What are you clinging to? Are you withholding more than you need? Yes, we all are. Generosity, it's a wonderful practice. Our retreat here in Pachamama in the 8th of March, and we've been doing them now for a number of years. These are Dana retreats because Elena and I, who do the teaching, we don't receive payment for the 5 days of teaching. We depend upon generosity of the people who come to the retreats donate gifts to us. It's very interesting. Sometimes a lot, sometimes not much. It changes. It's not like having a salary, you know. You can't depend on that amount of reward. It's very interesting. I recommend it. I tried doing it once for a while with my psychiatric practice, and people didn't like it at all. It's to leave it open. Well, you give me what you think this has been for you, how valuable this has been for you. It's much too much to ask people to make that decision. It really drives people buggy. Well, tell me what's best, you know. No, you decide how much has this meant to you. Is this noble generosity, or are we in the friendly marketplace here? It's a very interesting way of living. Didn't work for psychiatry. It made people crazy. Yeah, we like things cut and dried, and generosity is much too spacious and dangerous. before you know it, you can be giving away more than you want to give away, or less. So it is. The third pillar of the Dharma virtue, meaning living morally and respectfully, honestly. Virtue. Practice. You have to practice the Dharma. It doesn't just land in your lap for most people and then bloom into something incredible. You have to offer something of yourself. That's generosity. Practicing meditation is practicing generosity. Giving of your time for you. Giving away what you can give and share to others. That's a way of relating to the other. It's called the way of the Bodhisattva, where the me is more interested in the welfare of others than of oneself. That really seems rather highfalutin, but it's a very powerful way of living, the Bodhisattva way. The Dharma. This is Dharma practice. This is understanding the Dharma. The Dharma is a way of living. It's not a religion. It's a way of organizing life energies and society. I only wish more people knew it. I guess it's why I teach. I want everyone to know the value of Dharma practice clearly. The other day, I had a phone call from Jack Gornfield. We're in touch a lot. And before he said hello, he said, Robert, you've always been a teacher, haven't you? That was a startling question. And I said, well, I don't remember having any choice about it. And he said, I didn't either. He says, we're peas in the same pod. You know, teaching because that's what I do. Being generous because it feels good. Talking Dharma because it's spreading wisdom. Really is. So, I hope this talk has helped you understand what Dharma is, and a little bit clearer about that question, what is Dharma? Dharma. What is it? I still don't know. It's what it is. It's a way of living. If it's new to you, try it. Try the practice. Live according to the Eightfold Path. It's not easy to do. I once, at Spirit Rock, in my more rebellion years, when I was a young rebel, gave a Dharma talk on how many times I failed the Eightfold Path. Yeah. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to practice right speech. For some people, right livelihood is very difficult. But probably the hardest is practice. Practice, practice. You have to, when you get really involved in Dharma, you practice even when you don't want to. That kind of discipline is what comes. You practice because it's the thing to do. It's like generosity is the thing to do. It's just right. And you know it. So. I always come to the end of these Sunday morning talks with upsurging, and it just happened again, upsurging of warmth in my heart and gratitude to you for being here, for allowing me to say these words. You see, I ask to be allowed to serve. It's my privilege. It's my honor. And I am very grateful to you. And I feel very generous this morning. It was hard getting here today, but now it isn't. My generosity is the talks and the teaching and the enthusiasm. So, if the Dharma is interesting to you, explore it more. Go deep. Go deeper and deeper. You'll never regret it. You never will regret it. Thank you.